Hello, I'm Kimberly Dondo, Digital Content Manager, and welcome to the In Conversation With series, a series where I speak to notable figures in the realm of financial services. Listen as they share their personal journeys, thoughts on the industry, and advice for aspiring advisors. And in this week's In Conversation With podcast, we have Charles White Thompson, CEO at Saxo UK. So Charles, if you could give a further introduction to yourself, that would be great.
Hello, Kimberly. It's good to be here. My name's Charlie White Thompson. I'm the CEO of Saxo here in the United Kingdom. A bit about me, and then I'll hand back. Mm-hmm. I've been in the financial markets for over 25 years. I started out in the military. I then spent some time with Baring Securities and then moved on to an American investment bank called Donaldson, Lufkin & Jenrette, mm-hmm. which was bought by Credit Suisse. During my time at Credit Suisse, which was about 17 years, I looked after their equity business in Moscow, in Russia. So that was Russia, Kazakhstan, and Ukraine. Mm-hmm. And then on leaving Credit Suisse, I then set up an interior design business with my wife, which was a fantastic experience. Yeah. And then I flew into the orbit of Saxo, uh-huh. Which is a different business. It's a retail business as opposed to my institutional business. Mm-hmm. And I'm really enjoying my time here. So if I look back over the last 25 years, I've experienced a war in 1991 uh-huh. where I was involved in Gulf War One. I've had a bankruptcy when Baring Securities was bought down by Nick Leeson and his unauthorized trading. Uh-huh. And then I've had a takeover when DLJ bought Credit Suisse. So all of these things impact the way I think about things, and I'm looking forward to whatever is thrown at me next.
Yeah. Wow. You had a very, I don't know, interesting history of how you've ended up here, even like moving across to a completely more, I don't know, creative industry for a while and then coming back to financial services. That's quite interesting.
I agree. I think that, you know, we are all made up of our experiences, and I'm proud of my experiences, and they definitely affect and impact who I am. And I think it allows me to manage and run a business with a very large number of retail clients, different legs, whether it's the institutional or whether it's a self-directed trader or whether it's a self-directed investor. Mm-hmm. And all of those experiences support me in how I run the business on a day-to-day, and most importantly, how I think about this strategically as well.
Yeah. So moving over to retail, what was that transition like for you?
I mean, it's a big change. I mean, so if you're at an institutional investment bank like Credit mm-hmm. Suisse, you have, you know, 200 clients. If you mm-hmm. are at a retail business, you have, for example, Saxo has 800,000 clients.
Yeah.
So it's in that way, it's a big change. But for me, it's about, you write your plan and you execute on your plan, and mm-hmm. there will be things that get sent which can disrupt that plan, but it's how you deal with them. Mm-hmm. And I think with retail, the thing that's really important for me, it's like any business, but you scale good and you reduce bad. Mm-hmm. And where you can, you don't do minimum viable products, because I think minimum viable product give you that sort of saccharine high initially. Yeah. But then normally, in my experience, you then pay for it down the line. Right. So, you know, I like to be able to build scalable businesses where we keep the client in mind, where we focus on being best in class where we can, and we scale good and we reduce bad.
Yeah. So you've had a couple of decades of experience, and you know, the topic of this specific podcast is about how policy failures have kind of affected inflation and what we can do, or what you can see can be done to tame that. But you know, looking through history, it's clear that certain policies have caused inflation. So what are your thoughts on where we are currently?
Yeah, I think that's an interesting question, and there are several parts to that. So yeah. I think the first one, and this is what I've been thinking about, is that the last 10 years I call the Goldilocks period is over. And the Goldilocks period, the way I see that is there were very low interest rates and there was a lot of quantitative easing. So whenever there was an issue, effectively what happened is that central banks would fly into the rescue, throw a whole load of liquidity at the problem, and generally inflate their way out of it. And I think that there are consequences to that. There are consequences to that, and we see this in inflation now. But also, as I think with my retail hat on, or in fact, even with an institutional hat on, what it's also done is it's created a generation of investors with a skewed attitude towards risk, i.e. in some cases, bad news was viewed as good news because bad news would trigger rate cuts and quantitative easing, flooding the system with cheap money. And I think that what that's done is it's encouraged people to have a skewed attitude towards risk. And I think one of the things that I think a lot about now is we're now in a new paradigm. So it is very difficult to cut rates. Maybe you can for one-off situations. It is very difficult to flood the system with cash in the form of quantitative easing. And therefore, we are in a new paradigm. And I think that investors now need to, if you want to perform, you need to think that we are in a new paradigm and that effectively you need to understand that your portfolio has many gears and that you need to understand how to manage risk, which includes making money when the market goes down.
Yeah. And is that difficult to do when you're dealing with retail investors?
I think in general, wealth managers have missed the trick over the last 10 years, so that we had this very benign period, very supportive period. And I think that, you know, what I would like to have seen more is that wealth managers took that opportunity to inform, and I don't like the word educate, but I'll use it, educate their clients that the portfolio has many gears and it's multi-asset. And so it's, you know, it's commodities, it's bonds, it's FX. And this is not rocket science. I think that for whatever reason, finance have dressed this up in overly complicated language. And basically, it is not that complex. And I think that that's what I'd like to see is that I'd like to, you know, I think wealth managers have a responsibility now. If I'm right and we are in a new paradigm and there are shocks, I mean, who saw the Ukraine war coming? No. You know, I don't think we've seen all of the shockwaves from the COVID pandemic. No. I think that, you know, that I would like to see wealth managers now really embracing this subject, that the portfolio has many gears and that you understand how to operate in what are much more volatile markets.
Yeah. I think that piece about having those conversations and educating is quite important because I've seen people kind of fall down a hole and looking at other sources of people who don't have that level of expertise and knowledge, whether it's, you know, going to a Reddit subreddit and then getting recommendations from there just because these people are, you know, shouting like, oh, you can make such big returns and stuff like that, or whatever, messing with the establishment, whatever that means. And do you think that there is quite a way to go for wealth managers to kind of be able to circumvent that, you know, to get in front of those people and be like, do not listen to those to these things that you read on the internet, that we have the expertise, we have the knowledge?
Yeah, I think wealth managers have a big responsibility. They do. And, you know, we at Saxo, you know, I think about this every day. And, you know, what I'm saying is very conservative. It's conservative. I'm not talking, you know, at Saxo, we don't lead with leverage. We don't lead with, you know, it's not about trading for free, which is basically a misnomer. It's about just understanding that there are many things that you can do with your portfolio. As a retail investor, you are extremely powerful. you are as powerful as an institutional investor, and in some cases more powerful, because if you're a long-only institutional investor, then you don't have any ability to make money when the market goes down. You just go up and down with the tide, particularly for these, some of these index, for the index investing. And therefore, I think that it's, this will take time too. You know, we've spent 10 years in the Goldilocks period. It will take time to support retail investors to understand, you know, what they can do in these environments. And that is what it is.
Yeah. Yeah. And with the, you talked about the generation who have a skewed sense of risk. How do you think that they got to that point where people's perception of risk was skewed?
I think it was 10 years of very cheap money. It was 10 years of quantitative easing whenever there was a problem. Mm-hmm. It was 10 years of rates get cut to almost zero whenever there's an issue. And what happened is that you just flooded the system. You flooded the financial markets with cheap money. And that meant that you just saw these asset bubbles happen. And it's not just in the financial markets. It's arguably in the property markets. You will see that there are bubbles everywhere.
Yeah.
And that is as a result of that. And about 18 months ago, we did a competition on moral hazard, which is another way of calling the generation with a skewed attitude towards risk. Moral hazard is, and I'll use the tightrope walker as an analogy, that if you have a net, you are more confident when you walk across the rope.
Mm-hmm.
And effectively what happens is that, you know, what I'm saying here and what we're saying here is that central banks are not responsible for your portfolios. Mm-hmm. You are responsible for your portfolios. Mm-hmm. And therefore it's about, you know, getting this previous decade thought out of your view that someone will come in and bail you out. That just can't happen anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And therefore it's basically down to you. But you as a retail investor are very powerful. And I think a part of that is just understanding that you are.
Yeah. Yeah. And so moving on to like the main part, what do you think can be done to tame inflation with the recent policy failures we've seen?
Yeah. So I think I will answer that in a slightly different way. One of the ways I view this is nanny finance. And nanny finance is where it's this whole thing about QE and rate cuts. Whenever there was an issue, nanny ran in the form of central banks and made it all better.
Mm-hmm.
But it's pretty difficult, right? Because you can't do that anymore. You can't, it's very difficult to lower rates. It's very difficult to flood the system with QE because it's just, you know, you can't borrow anymore to do that. Or you can, but it has the inflationary. And that, so what I call it is, it's about threading the needle. So effectively you have high inflation.
Mm-hmm.
And the way, so if you think that the UK inflation is around 11% now.
Yeah.
One of the ways you bring that under control is that your main lever is to raise interest rates.
Right.
But that's tough because you have an indebted consumer.
Mm-hmm.
And therefore, the more you raise interest rates, the more the cost of that debt goes up. And it's a very challenging time.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I don't envy the Bank of England's, the governor of the Bank of England's role, because it's about threading that. You need to bring down inflation without significantly negatively hurting the economy and the consumer.
Mm-hmm.
So I call that, it's about threading the needle between managing inflation by using the interest rates lever, i.e. moving interest rates up in the knowledge that the consumer is levered.
Yeah. And do you perceive that we would be able to have a soft landing at the end of all this?
I mean, I think that's the key question. I think we are in a recessionary, and we are in a recession now.
Mm-hmm.
I think that winter will be difficult, particularly if we have a cold winter. I mean, we have the cost of living crisis. Mm-hmm. We have interest rates moving up. We have a leveraged consumer, and the main thing is to control inflation. And I think the jury is still out. And I don't underestimate it. It's a very challenging place to be. But what I would say is that the key here is to manage your own risk. So to work out the concentration risk in your portfolio, to work out, you know, to use things like dollar averaging when you're investing in the market, so you don't put it all in one place, mm-hmm. and to understand that you are very powerful and that you have the ability to navigate what are uncertain and difficult times.
So what are you doing at Saxo for your retail customers who might have any worries, concerns?
I think about this the whole time. So first mm-hmm. of all, we have a multi-asset platform. So we mm-hmm. have 40,000 instruments. Mm-hmm. And therefore, you have the ability to, with these 40,000 instruments, you have the ability to tackle most things that the market throws at you as a mm-hmm. as a client.
Yeah.
In addition, we spend a lot of time via our content and strategy teams talking about risk management, talking about dollar averaging, talking mm-hmm. about thinking about old rules that once used to apply, for example, in the Goldilocks era, things like always buy the dip. Always buying the dip is not the way to manage risk.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that was the way to manage risk. It's not the way to manage risk now. Mm-hmm. So we spend a lot of time and capital on ensuring that our clients have access to all of the gears of the portfolio, to use the car analogy that I've been talking to. Mm-hmm. And then overlaying that, we discuss ways to manage risk and ways to deal with these very volatile markets. Because when I talk about managing risk, people may say, well, what do you mean by that? It's how you manage what we're being thrown at, mm-hmm. how you manage these markets.
Mm-hmm.
And in many cases, we're in new territory. And so that's going to take time, but we are here for the long term and we're up for the challenge.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that makes me feel hopeful. So you've spoken to me about working with retail investors, but I know that you also work with wealth managers. So what are you doing currently, and what do you see yourself moving forward doing with wealth managers during this time period?
Yes, thank you for that question, Kimberly. So we have three legs to this business, two of which where we work with individuals, whether they're investors or retail traders. And then the third leg is where we work with wealth managers or large banks. And this is... this is a really exciting area for us, because if I look at some of our conversations that we're having with very large banks and very large wealth managers, is that the first dialogue I hear from their senior managers or their CEOs is that they're thinking about three things. They're thinking about, do they buy,
mm-hmm.
do they partner,
mm-hmm.
or do they build? And, you know, that if you're a CEO of a large bank or a wealth manager, buying is quite expensive.
Yeah.
Building can take a long time because you don't have all of the expertise to do things. And then partnering is an area that where we are being most engaged, is where institutions come to us and they say, this is what we're thinking about, how you can help. And I think this partnership is really important, because if I look at the technology space now, or fintech, it's an arms race.
Yeah.
And at Saxo, we have 1,500 IT people,
mm-hmm.
and we have a single technology stack. Many of the institutions, or some of the institutions I speak to, have a limited number of IT people, and they have a technology stack that is bifurcated because either it's been built over 25 years, or they've had loads of acquisitions. And so it's basically looks like a sort of, it's almost like a jigsaw puzzle. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And in this environment, it's quite difficult to compete when you have a small number of IT people and your technology stack is basically joined together with Sellotape and other things like that. And so that's a conversation that, you know, that we're really enjoying. I think that the most progressive CEOs are people who recognize, in my opinion, the fact that this is an arms race, that the value of a single technology stack, the value of being able to access a multi-asset platform is really important.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm enjoying those conversations. And I think that it will be, one of our fastest growing legs of our business.
Yeah. Yeah, that sounds very encouraging. So finally, I know that you may not have like a complete forecast, but I'm sure you're thinking of 2023. What do you perceive 2023 looking like in terms of inflation, and also in terms of your business at Saxo and how you are going to tackle those risks that might come up?
Yeah, so we've had a very interesting conversation. We've spoken about nanny finance. We've spoken about policy failure. We've spoken about the end of the Goldilocks era, where there was loads of free money sloshing around. And we're now, I think we're now in a new paradigm, which will be much more volatile. We haven't seen all of the repercussions of the COVID. We haven't seen all of the repercussions of this tragic war in Ukraine. So I think that the way I think about 2023 is that we should prepare for volatile markets, i.e. markets that go up and down. There will be left field shocks that we need to prepare for. So I think that, and if you think about inflation, let's stick with the UK, because that's where most of the people who will be listening today, the forecast is that this sort of peaks sometime towards the end of this year. Well, I think what we need to do is we need to see if that actually does happen. Because as I think about inflation, once the inflation genie is out of the bottle, it's quite difficult to get it back in again. And the Bank of England is seeing that. And what I say to people is that if you don't understand inflation, then speak to people who were working when we had our last big inflationary time, which was in the 1970s. So in that case, I speak to my father and I speak to my father-in-law. I say, what was it like to be living and working in an inflationary environment? And it's pretty, it's tough. I mean, it's a hidden tax. They talk to me about examples where set items went incrementally up year on year on year on year. And so I think it's about, being informed on this, understanding of all of the power that you have at your fingertips, that your portfolio has many gears. And therefore, I think that winter will be more difficult. I think winter will continue to be difficult, and the cost of living crisis is there. And therefore, I'm preparing for a more volatile paradigm, a more volatile period. And that's how I see 2023. But, it's not all doom and gloom. I think for those people who are well equipped and those people who can understand how to operate in this market, each day brings a new opportunity. And I've said it several times, but I'm going to say it again. As a retail investor, you are very powerful. And the wealth managers, I think, now have a responsibility to ensure that the retail investors have access to all the key drivers so that their clients can operate in this more difficult paradigm.
Well, thank you so much, Charles, for speaking with me today. I had a really great conversation and I think our audience will love it.
Me too. It was really good to be with you, Kimberly. Thank you very much.
Okay. Thank you for listening to In Conversation With. We do hope that you enjoyed it. Please do keep up to date with all our new releases via Podbean, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and everywhere else you get your podcasts from. You can also keep up to date with all our new content published on the Money Marketing website, as well as our print edition Money Marketing magazine. So make sure to subscribe. Follow us on Twitter, LinkedIn, Facebook, and Instagram. See you next time.